Okay, this is Elaine Ayers from the Oral History Program at UW-Madison. I'm talking to Jim Bodie on September 13th, 2012 in the University Archives. So Jim, the first question I had regards the primate laboratory. Again, these are things that you've sent me since our last interview. So you mentioned that people talked a lot about the behavior of the primates. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, first of all, they're penned up and closed place, and they can't see anybody else, so that's pretty lonely. And some are there a very long time, again lonely, and then they actually go crazy sometimes because they just—it's not a real good environment.
The isolation.
Yeah.
You also said that there may have been some discussion of whether the primates knew the difference between adult humans and children.
I'm certain of that. Probably dogs do too, but mm-hmm. You know. But they're pretty loud and boisterous when a grown up comes into their cages. At least 50 years ago they were, anyway. And that's right.
Let's see. And could you talk a little bit more about the shaking mother monkey that you created?
Yeah, I was really surprised. At one point you asked for the Iron Maiden.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what that was. I'll say the singing group. And then I realized, as I looked at it further, I realized that I had built one of the monkeys for the Iron Maiden.
Mm-hmm.
And I can describe in some detail how it worked.
Yeah.
But I was surprised to find out that meant a lot to somebody. Because from where I was out in the shop, I just kind of made these things and
mm-hmm.
sent them out there and never see them again. But, so anyway.
Yeah, if you could give a little bit more detail on how it was actually created, that would be great.
Yeah, well, the original surrogate mother started off as a rabbit cloth tube or a monkey with a rabbit cloth cross tube with a terry cloth towel. And Harry discovered that the terry cloth towel was the very best. And so the particular one I was working on, I built it so that there were prongs made of welding rods and attached them inside the body. And the one I made was the prongs that stick out went through the terry cloth. And then there she was, all sweet and wonderful, and the little baby comes over, climbs on her because I love that terry cloth.
Mm-hmm.
What I did was I built a movie film leader that would wrap around and around and around inside, and there were holes in the leader, so the microswitch dropped in, and then all heck broke loose. The monkey just got wild, because as soon as that happened,
mm-hmm.
the prongs came out like this, and the monkey's like this. Can't see this too well on a radio, but
yeah.
So this monkey that I made
mm-hmm.
classifies as an Iron Maiden one after I read it later.
Yeah.
And the prongs and the shaking, and they did not like that.
Okay, that's great. Let's see. Would you like to talk about anything else about the primate lab?
Well, I went through it on purpose mm-hmm. A few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I was anxious to go in there. I've been in there one time before where I wanted to see if my ashtray was there that I
yeah.
made for Harry. And it was then.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't now because Helen took it. And I was kind of disappointed that the building looked more clinical
mm-hmm.
than it did when we had just a bunch of college kids running around. You know, we didn't have any time clocks or anything like that. So we were kind of really free to roam and do what we have to do.
And now you need identification to get in and everything.
Yeah. There's a man that graduated from the Army or got out of the Army. Mowbray was his name, Colonel Mowbray.
Mm-hmm.
M-O-B-R-A-Y. And he was going to bring order to this chaos. People were going to have to come to work on time. And of course, the people thought, well, we are. We're here, and, you know, we're here early, maybe. Well, then we'll have to put in time clocks. Mm. Where the people were billed. In fact, I thought, I don't know, this place is not getting better. So I went down the street to Madison Radio Shop and got a job fixing radios.
Mm-hmm.
Mowbray came down to that place, said, what are you doing here? I said, well, I work here. Well, no, you know, you work for me. Oh, okay. Then I went back and got my next paycheck. I got a $200 raise. And in those days, it's like $1,000.
Yeah.
And I couldn't figure out why it was. Well, it turned out in the biennium budget, there was no slot to put me in
mm-hmm.
for my particular skill set. So they had to create a new job called laboratory specialist.
Okay.
And I got that and $200, and my job didn't change.
Do you remember what the actual primate lab looked like when you were working there? Because now it has that whole compound with different buildings. Was it just one building when you were there?
Well, you know where the two sheds are, tin sheds are?
Yeah.
Alongside,
yep.
There's two
mm-hmm.
of them. The first one, Jess Harris worked in there. He built
okay.
wire mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one, Art Schmidt and I worked in there.
Okay.
And we did more of the electrical stuff, and micro switches and relays. And
mm-hmm.
What we made were electromechanical devices.
Okay.
And that's like saying it's not computer,
mm-hmm.
computer driven. And so those two buildings are still there.
Right.
And the one building where I worked, I think, was pretty nice tools and so on. But when we went back down there a few weeks ago, it was a warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
It's just junk. It's just
yeah.
stuff thrown in there. And I don't know if they have any testing equipment. I don't know where they put it. And the guy that was leading me through the tour, I said, "Say, you know, there's a bathroom down there."
Mm-hmm.
No. And down the hall, at the end of the hall, there's a door you opened up. There was a bathroom. Everybody knew where it was because that's what it was used for. And actually, it was a surprise to the people working that there was such a thing there. Why am I making such a big deal about a bathroom?
Mm-hmm.
But it was so odd because when I worked there, it was all very open and airy
yeah.
and all that.
Well, and you said that some of the monkeys were being operated on right in the middle of the hallway, right?
Yeah. We're right in the lobby.
Yeah.
The entrance was on this end.
Okay.
Which is west, I guess.
Right.
And this monkey was sitting up in this big chair, just locked in place with those two rods in his ears. And people just went by and laughed and so on. But there were animal rights people that didn't like it.
Yeah. But did those animal rights people ever come and tour the facilities, or was it, did they only know about it from other people? Or
I think they is just hearsay, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and there's still a fair amount of animal rights activists that oppose the Primate Center even today.
Yeah, I've read about that.
Yeah.
But, you know, what Harry's thesis was that he wanted to, he was interested in studying love.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you want to do that, he needed to do testing with something. And he looked around for what animals would work for him. Rats or mice or monkeys.
Mm-hmm.
Well, monkeys would because they live longer. And so that's why they put them in such a special place to be.
Do you have an opinion on his experiments? You don't have to give one if you don't want
to. Well, I didn't really know what any of it was about, because I didn't know about this love theory. And, and you know, that's when Harry started going in the direction of away from love and toward meanness and the Iron Maidens kind of thing. And that prong thing that I made was an Iron Maiden concept. And I, let's see. Yeah, I guess that's about it. I guess you started off asking if it differed from the cloth monkeys. And the answer was, yeah, the cloth was for love and all that. But they still had to test them. And maybe they tested a baby who just was with his mother or in the room with the cloth mother, loving the cloth mother. And so his relationship with the, you know, the baby monkey's relationship was very necessary, because they were the ones that were getting the results of the love or lack of love. And this thing I built a lot of things, but that one there just rattled and shook and made noise. Maybe it's still here, but
I have no idea where it might be.
Okay.
Did you know anything about the social isolation experiments? I'm guessing those didn't have as much equipment that you would have been involved in, but some of his more controversial work were his experiments where he separated baby monkeys from all the other animals
for a long time.
Yeah,
I knew about that.
At the time or later?
I don't know. Yeah, maybe it was later. It was 50 years ago.
Right. Okay, we can move on to some of your other experiences at UW. Before you came here, you mentioned that as a teenager, you thought you would make a career out of working at a gas station. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, I started working in the gas station at age 14. And that's, of course, how I learned to drive.
Okay.
And without a license. I forget what I made. Pepper's Garage was 40 cents an hour. And everybody that knew me, you can fix cars, you'll go into engineering. And that's what it did work out. Self-fulfilling prophecy.
But going to university instead of staying at a garage.
But what?
But you went to a university instead of staying at a garage, I guess.
Oh, yeah, I was silly. My dad wanted to see me become a tool and die maker because I made so much more money. But I'm glad I chose the path I took.
Yeah. And you said that your teachers in high school encouraged you to go into mechanical engineering. Is that?
And especially Wisconsin.
Because you had to choose a land grant school to go to, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
To get the Navy ROTC scholarship. Well, for them, they weren't going to give me any money unless I went.
Right.
And then that brought on my look at the history of land grant colleges.
Yeah. Well, you brought up the Navy, and I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the summer of 56 when you went on the Navy ship cruise. I was wondering who else was on the cruise, what you did on the cruise, and maybe what you did when you docked in the different ports.
Oh, no.
as much as you can remember, at least.
Well, every summer there was a cruise.
Okay.
And the first summer I went on was a cruiser, Albany. Well, I went out with a whole flotilla, and we practiced gunnery and shooting things and planes. Small planes would come and attack us, we'd shoot it down. Anyway, then we'd get into a port. The first one we got into was Valencia, Spain. That was really interesting. I didn't speak Spanish, but from there we found our way to a beach at El Salir in Spain. And get there, someone had to teach us a little Spanish.
Mm.
And the words were La Beach, La Playa de El Soler.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know Spanish?
A little bit.
Well, anyway, they couldn't understand me.
Mm-hmm.
Spanish people. So we lived on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a bunch of girls came down to the dock, and they were prancing around down there trying to find out something, and we couldn't figure it out. Finally, one of the middies did, and that was that they want to know where the dance hall was. Was it in here, the dance hall, which would be the side of the ship? And anyway, so we worked on the ship just like Navy sailors.
Okay.
And we had regular jobs. And then during general quarters, or when I would shoot at somebody, I was the first mount on the 3-inch gunner.
Okay.
I put big 3-inch shells into the breech.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went up there and bang, it flopped off. And the next level up for us was the 8-inch guns. And it'd go in because it was so loud. And the Wisconsin was sailing with us.
Mm-hmm.
The 16-inch guns, now those are the ones you had to stay in. And you could actually see that shell, a 16-inch shell. You could see it going over your head. You know, to just make a noise like that. And it's quite stunning.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then we pull in the port, and we go to parties and dances and special things that Spanish people had for us.
Mm-hmm.
Then we cruise on up to Dublin, Ireland.
Okay.
And from there, took an Aer Lingus flight to London.
Mm-hmm.
And that was real good. So I saw both Ireland and London on one stop. And you know, I'll never have that experience again, probably. And we wound on down to Spain, Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
And heard of Guantanamo Bay,
really,
Gitmo, we called it.
Okay.
And we had to stay in the Navy. It was part of the U.S., I guess,
mm-hmm.
Guantanamo. And there was a fence up the hill. And there was a hole in the fence, and people that lived on Gitmo
mm-hmm.
would come down through the fence and go to the jobs and on the naval station.
Okay.
Naval place. So we had a lot of fun with the people, too. And then going to ourselves, it didn't seem like many, 56 days, 52 days?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's 56.
I think you said 52, and it happened in 1956.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go with that. Nobody will call me a liar.
Did you ever think that that was what you were going to end up doing, staying in the Navy?
Well, I would have, but I dropped out of school for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that, they kick you out.
Right.
And send you down to Great Lakes. And
mm-hmm.
They make it sound like it's a real big deal. Well, guys were buying wedding rings and everything else to wear, and that way they would not be allowed back. We're going to kick you out of the program.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say, that's good, you pay for 3 years. We'll go for the fourth ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't deliberately do it that way. I did have to get out of school. Just because I had to work.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, that was, there's another cruise.
Mm-hmm.
And that was at Little Creek, Virginia.
Okay.
We trained with Marines.
Mm-hmm.
And then we flew in helicopters and all that. And then we invaded Virginia with our LCVP, which I drove like that.
Mm-hmm.
Then we went on down to Corpus Christi, Texas. That was a lot more fun. That was the Corpus Christi Naval Air Station. And we there flew to Valencia. No, flew to, flew from, I can't remember the the name of the beast. But anyway, went to a city in Spain and got thoroughly lost in Valencia. But we learned to fly a plane. That was the thing.
Okay.
That was neat. So we flew in a T-33 jet trainer and we each took turns. And by those standards, it was a jet fighter plane, but it would be pretty old-fashioned right now.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, we flew in a Martin Merlin bomber. There were 12 middies on the plane. We each took a turn flying it.
Mm-hmm.
And what we had to do was come down and drop our bomb on a submarine. Well, there's two cans in the water 300 feet apart, and that was the submarine.
Okay.
So the pilot said, well, that was in the left-hand seat. So you go down and get down about 300 feet and then go over that bomb and drop the bomb, which is just a dud. But before that, I realized I'm going to go below 300 feet or 300 feet above the Gulf of Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And I just roll her over and the wheel over so that the plane would go in that direction. And the pilot said, my God, I got a wife and kids at home. And I said, really? I thought he'd fix anything. Well, anyway, we came back and I don't know what we did else. We did at Corpus Christi. But it was actually fun. I mean, when you go through something like that, you only think of the good things.
Yeah.
I mean, like back on the Albany, we were just dirty and filthy and sweaty and everything. But now when you look back, you say, boy, that was really neat.
Yeah. And there wouldn't be any women on those cruises, were there?
No, there is now. But yeah. No, I don't think so.
Okay. The next event that I think is worth discussing that you emailed me is the death of your friend Charlie Moore during a boxing match.
Yeah. Well, we had boxing at the university.
Okay.
And he was hit in the head enough times that he finally got knocked out and he died.
Mm. Do you remember when that was?
Well, it would be, I came here in 55, 58, 57.
Okay.
Yeah, that was sad. I knew the guy pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no surprise, though, that boxing got dropped from the program. You don't see it anymore.
Yeah.
At all universities.
Mm-hmm. So was that a pretty big scandal on the university campus at the time?
Well, I don't know. We just took it like it was, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
He probably went to the hospital and died.
Yeah. That is really sad.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You also made a list of what you consider to be the milestone changes at UW during your years. Do you want to go through those? I also wrote them down if you...
Yeah. Well, just to fill up the paper, I thought about what struck me as we rolled through this many years. And so I just started at the beginning and I put down,
first you have Harlow's research using surrogate mothers.
Yeah, that was a gimme there. I mean, it happened and it was very good.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
I don't know if you even know this, but the football stadium is 10 feet lower than it used to be.
Okay.
And if the seats are shaped at an angle, if you drop it 10 feet, you'll eliminate the track.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a kind of a pivotal thing. He didn't do that every year. I mean, all these are kind of just thrown out there for to see. This really strikes me, the tuition increase from $90 an hour to whatever it is. Mm-hmm. What is it, around $10,000?
I know that I'm paying about $13,000 a year to go here.
That's a
great in-state tuition.
In-state?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was right. A year.
Yeah.
oh, this would be only $7,000. I don't know, it's just nuts. And if I lived in, part of the time I lived in a fraternity house, mm-hmm. and I paid $25 a month for the rent. You know, I always had meal jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And so, actually, if the Navy gives you $50 a month, I'd pay $25.50.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I got 50, I got my books paid for, which were only about $35. And what was the other one?
And you were supporting yourself in college, right? After the Navy ROTC scholarship ran out?
Yeah.
Okay, through meal jobs mostly?
Meal jobs, drove cab,
mm-hmm.
worked at the primary lab. It was pretty good pay.
Do you remember what you were getting paid there, approximately?
No, I remember when one time I walked in, I got my paycheck at the primary lab, that's what it was. And it was $200 more than I normally got.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to my boss and said, what's going on? Well, did I tell you this already?
A little bit, yeah.
Oh, we'll start over again, huh? So anyway, that helped. Mm-hmm. Increasing that pay to the primary lab helped a lot. Because the pay scale for any student work was $1.25 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. And you know, but you know, we didn't come driving into town with a big trailer behind us either, like the kids do now, with full of stereo equipment.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, even my kids did that. Right. Buy cars.
Well, rent's gone up quite a bit, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You mentioned, I forget what it was called, but there was a cafe sort of across from the Primate Lab that's now Indie Coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Did you work there?
Yeah, but it was Patty Ann's Cafe.
Patty Ann's Cafe, okay.
That was a neat job.
Because
mm-hmm. at noon, Quality Laundry, which is now a bicycle shop,
mm-hmm.
all the women in there ran over to Patty Ann's.
Mm-hmm.
I ran down to Patty Ann's. We didn't have a menu or anything. And I would call orders in the whole length of the restaurant,
mm-hmm.
like Swedish meatball, child's portion.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd just yell down there, Child's Swedish meatballs or something like that. And so there was women there, they got their food, half an hour, boom, they were out.
Mm-hmm.
Place was dead. And that's gone through several name changes.
Well, I can tell you that it's pretty much the same at Indie Coffee now. Everybody from the Primate Lab goes there right about noon and stay there for about 20, 30 minutes and run back to work, and including myself.
And you eat there too then?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, back then they had home-style cooking. They would brag about it, signs up there. So Bob made meals, and meatballs, and roast beef, and
mm-hmm.
you know, things like that.
Yeah, now it's mostly sandwiches and soups and kind of fast stuff like that.
Yeah, I would have rather had a hamburger.
Mm-hmm.
And when the football season was on, we put out a different menu. Was about, you know, 50% more higher than it was during the football season.
Oh.
I know. But then directly across the street was a radio shop. That building's still there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the radio shop where I worked for Ken Clark, who's dead now. Yeah. That's about it.
The next thing on your list after tuition was the student population growing so much.
Yeah. I really thought that is a lot to go from 17,000 to 42,000 or whatever it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's because of grad school or what.
Well, the undergrad classes, you know, now it's about 10,000 students in each undergraduate class.
Okay.
Let's see. You also talked about the money spent on the construction of new bridges.
Of the bridges?
Mm-hmm.
Of anything. I didn't say bridges. Did I? All right. Oh, that's on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind. Where is it?
It may have been on one of the older lists that you sent me.
Is this the one of the university
yeah.
spent $1 million every Monday?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a figuratively speaking. That was a lot of money, and $1 million was a lot of money, and
yeah.
doing it once a week was just, that's why there's so many buildings.
Right. And then you also mentioned that enrollment no longer required that you knew how to swim.
Yeah.
Did you have to take a swimming test when you enrolled here?
Yeah. That's right. No, maybe boys didn't. Yeah, let's say they did. You had to know how to swim.
I've never heard that before.
You never heard it?
Mm-mm.
And then I make a statement about girls, women, ladies, about Fayette also. The last, second to last item.
Were you required to take Fayette classes when you went here?
Oh, yeah.
Did you get to choose which ones?
Yeah. If you didn't know how to swim, you had to take swimming.
Okay. Did they give you a swimming test or something? Is that how they?
I had to swim the length and back or something
okay.
like that. Yeah, it was a test. But about the women, that was, we go through a physical exam at the armory.
Okay.
And the women were examined by medical students. And they had nothing above the waist.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife can tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
She had to go through that. Gross.
And they had to take Phi-Ed classes.
Yeah.
What do you know if there were, was it different sports or was it?
Well, for the guys it was, I don't know what it was for the women. But I took bowling,
mm-hmm.
badminton. Bowling and badminton and tumbling, maybe? Maybe that's all it was bowling and badminton. But it was, and I think it was a quarter, so I think I took 2 years.
Okay.
Oh, boy, what a memory.
I'm happy that isn't a requirement anymore.
Which one?
Any Phi-Ed.
Okay, the physical or the?
Any of it. I didn't have to take any Phi-Ed classes here. I'm pretty happy about it.
Because you had them someplace else? Or?
Nope, it's just not a requirement.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm not very sporty.
Well, that's smart. Golf, that's what I took. So if I can name three of them, bowling, mm-hmm. golf, and...
Badminton.
And what?
Badminton, you said?
Yeah, and there must have been a fourth, which I can't remember. Jeez, I could have looked at my transcript
mm-hmm.
before I came. It could have given me my transcript. I wanted to
check your grades.
Yeah. No, thank you. I got to throw that away somewhere.
Is there anything else you want to add about your undergrad here before we move on to after you graduated?
I liked what we were doing in undergrad school. And the coursework in mechanical engineering
mm-hmm.
was tailored around a lot of cookbook courses. And as I took 6 years, and as we moved through the process,
mm-hmm.
I was starting to catch up with calculus and differential equations and things like that that I wouldn't have had to do if I had gone 4 years.
Mm.
But you can go 4 years for the same reason you can now. You can't schedule. Very well.
Mm-hmm.
So I liked it because the formulas were, say for a pipe full of water, so many cubic feet per minute times the diameter and divided by 144 or something like that. But as time went on, I started getting into courses that would require differential equations of blah, blah, blah. It was harder.
Mm-hmm.
But I made it.
And you got pretty good grades?
I wouldn't say that, but I passed.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's the point. I should have put that down there. Right now, back then, C, how's it going? B is equivalent to C. If you get a C, B, if you get a C, well, you must know the answer to that. You're graded higher now.
Oh.
Okay, so if I was a C student then,
yeah,
I would probably be a B student. One is because the TAs want to do well also, and the way they do well is to get better grades
mm-hmm.
out of the undergrads.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't care, but it reflected on my, my grades going forward.
Yeah.
But it didn't matter because I got the degree anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some place I say the events, chain of events that went through before you got married and had the baby.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly the way it happened, as opposed to the way it was when I was an undergrad. Pretty rigid coursework. And the other thing is, we didn't have a lot of foreign students,
mm.
or many at all, and so we could understand their English
mm-hmm.
better. And then, and then they're teaching English. And a lot of people complain about it, so they don't feel biased or prejudiced.
Yeah.
It's just the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think we solicit students from other countries because they're so willing.
Right. Do you remember if you were required to take English classes or classes that were outside of your major?
Sure. Yes.
Did you have a good time with those other classes, or?
Oh, a good time, you said?
Yeah, did you do okay in them? Did you like your English class or whatever else you had to take?
I loved it.
Really?
History of the West, that was my favorite.
Do you remember who that was taught by? It's remembering back kind of far.
No. Not a one of them.
Okay.
I remember the social. Well, that's right. I dropped out of engineering and went to undergrad, or went on the Hill courses, I call them. You probably do too.
I don't know what that is.
Bascom Hill.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
So I took a semester's worth of Hill courses, so Psych 1. And I know they're all numbered different now. Mm. Psych 1, Soc 1. I think English literature might have been one of those. I can't remember all the courses. I should have looked at the transcript. Should have bought
them
all. Yeah.
Okay, do you want to move on to after you graduated?
Sure. I can remember most of that.
Yeah. So would you explain a little bit more about your engineering company?
Yeah. I worked at Oscar Mayer for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then became a supervising industrial engineer over 4 IEs. And we would go out in the plant and do things to make things better and safer. And
kind of quality control things?
Well, quality control standards, labor mm-hmm. standards. And I was there for 8 years. And then I decided to move on to Graber Company in Middleton.
Mm-hmm.
I was there 7 years. And I decided to quit. So I bought a laundromat, which is straight north, south of here, on Orchard.
Mm-hmm.
And I also bought a couple of apartment buildings. I had gotten some money. And was able to parlay into the consulting job. And so I hired, over a few years, I hired three engineers. And we traveled all over the country and sometimes Canada. And we did facility planning projects, a lot of statement processing, mail. Mm-hmm. We modernized mailing systems in large companies. You know, I can't remember all this. I should have bought a list. Mm-hmm. But and large companies like IBM and Xerox, yeah, and American Family Insurance, which is a small one for us. Mm-hmm. And we had a methodical way figured out. We'd go in there, I'd go with the engineers. We'd all go in there, I'd go back, write it up, and I don't go back till it's time to present it. Mm-hmm. And they had to travel back and forth. And right now, people look for cheaper fares because for whatever reason they can get them. We didn't care. We'd go to a meeting in St. Louis or Dallas from here, go to the meeting at 10, 11 o'clock, mm-hmm, have the meeting, and come home that same day. Mm-hmm. And not too many people can say they travel back and forth in one day. It was nice when we could find somebody who would lease a plane, because they weren't very expensive. Mm-hmm. They still aren't. And like three or four people will pay the cost of a plane, a small plane. And there you don't have to go to other airports. Mm-hmm. Go from here to Missouri and do your work, come back in a couple hours. Yeah, a lot of people don't know that and they don't do it as a result. Mm-hmm. So let's see. Okay, industrial engineering. Yeah, stay with that. Or consulting engineering. I would say we were the only ones in the whole country that had the breadth of knowledge that we had in the document processing aspect. And that's what it was called.
Okay.
And document processing. And we did other engineering things, but the highest percentage would be document processing. Okay.
Yeah, and then you also said that you were an expert witness.
Yeah, that's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if a guy gets sued, let me think. Well, I'll just name one that's nearby here. There's a roundhouse corner region in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
There was a roundhouse. I think it's gone. Now it's a great big patch of gravel. Well, this guy fell off it. There wasn't any railings. Hurt his back. I mean, they're all like that. Get hit by forklift trucks.
Okay.
Loading docks. Pallets falling on you. So all these things happen. And so of course, the plaintiff, the guy that got injured, brings a suit against the company.
Mm-hmm.
And that company's lawyer goes out and hires a lawyer. Well, it got to be kind of bad because these storefront lawyers would go in and they'd settle a case for $90,000. Guy get his fee of a third,
mm-hmm,
the lawyer. That's 60, and he'd take the third. And you have to pay for the other side's experts. By that time, the plaintiff got not very much. But I enjoyed it because I was charging a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a good pay. I mentioned $200 an hour, and
that's
pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
But something happened in this industry of plaintiff lawyers. They started losing. Now, what happened is the companies started to persevere,
mm-hmm,
and move forward and fight the case, bring in very expensive experts, including me sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Only to lose it because of all that. So the lawyer lost. They spent all that money on me and everybody else. I mean, I go to Dallas, take 2 days to do my job.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever, $32,000 for that. Is that $200? Yeah. So, but that's good. If most retired engineers trying to move toward that kind of work, expert work.
Now, you also mentioned that real estate was a growing business in the 1980s, and you just said that you bought a laundromat and a couple other buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk a little bit more about that and maybe where the buildings were?
Well, things have really changed since then, in the early 80s, because things are cheaper,
mm-hmm.
for one thing, and inflation was high enough. It would increase the price of properties. Let's just say an apartment building that costs $100,000. Let's say you had to put a down payment of, I'm going to call it $10,000. So he's got this $10,000 down payment, which he gives him, buys a building, carries a loan against the $90,000. And in a year's time, inflation, the price index was going up anywhere from 10% to 19% compared to what's now zero practically.
Yeah.
Well, if you bought a building for $100,000, you put $10,000 down, it'll increase in value by, because of inflation, to...
Sometimes the lights go off if nobody's moving around. There we go.
It's me. He could buy another $100,000 building because now he's got another down payment.
Mm-hmm.
And people could just grow their holdings like crazy. Then that kind of fell apart. By that time, I had sold everything. Sold that.
So you were buying the buildings and reselling them?
I have, yeah.
Okay.
And some things are kind of sad about that business of student apartments, because they'd break their heads to clean the apartment. They wouldn't get a clean, I'd have to clean it.
Yeah.
And they didn't get their security deposit back.
Mm-hmm.
Too bad. Some landlords took the attitude, well, it's clean enough for them, it'll be clean enough for them.
Yeah.
Then the laundromat was kind of neat. Do you know the laundromat, by the way? See, mm-hmm. you're on Wilson Street, aren't you?
Yep.
I remember that from a letterhead.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, if you walk straight that way on Orchard Street.
Okay.
To Mound Street. It's on the corner of Orchard and Mound.
Okay.
Anyway, a laundromat in those days, 75 washer laundromat, cost $75 an hour, around $3,000 for the dryers,
mm-hmm.
and everything. That was an incredible amount of money. It's a $3,000 a machine with the plumbing and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yes, it was. Okay. So, sat down with, there was a guy that owned the building.
Mm-hmm.
He owned the grocery store. And he ran that, and I leased the laundromat from him, the space. And Ray came up and said, he was a laundromat owner. He said, well, my rent's going to be pretty soon. Why don't you just make up a lease? I'll sign it. I said, Ray, I got to tell you something. I'm going to run the laundromat. And we are, he said. Yeah. Well, I could have just walked out and bought new machines. But we went to his tavern on Williamson Street and went in there. Ray Cook was on one side of the bar, I was on the other side. And I said, okay, Ray, give me a piece of paper. And so he gave me scrap paper. I said, write down a number. And this is really the way to deal. Write down a number. So I did $5,000. No, how did you do that? That doesn't make much difference. Let's put down $7,500. Turn it over like that. And in this case, he put down $10,000. No, I was 5, he was 10, I was, he said, okay, let's meet in the middle. And so we had this laundromat for really cheap, usually would be 3,000. Oh, then this laundromat on Park Street closed and he auctioned off all his stuff. Oh. So I had new dryers then. Mm-hmm. And some of those washers were 1960. That would be way back, 15 years. So anyway, I owned a laundromat. It was pretty, really a moneymaker. Mm-hmm. Probably because I didn't spend any money buying it. And the apartments we've gone through. And then I owned apartment buildings where normal people lived.
Okay. Do you remember where those were?
On Russet Road, mm-hmm. on Meadowood, on Allied Drive. Oh, that's rough. That rough area, it's getting rougher.
Mm-hmm.
On Allied Drive, it was just a mix of people. But it was, anyway, there were some students there, actually, mm-hmm. that took a bus into town.
Yeah.
That was it, and I got rid of them as soon as I could because I was getting tired of it. Mm-hmm. I'd rather do consulting then.
Yeah.
Which I did. That's what I did. So I owned those two buildings, the laundromat. So I got rid of them. Went into consulting.
Well, that is pretty much all the questions that I had written up for today. Is there anything else that you get on the record?
No.
I guess one question that we sometimes ask people is whether you have noticed any change in students today versus when you were a student. That one is a little hard to judge, I guess, but.
Well, not real hard. My kids both went to the university. Right. And it wasn't that long ago. But I can't think of anything. the student behavior, I guess you'd have to say that, including the stadium, the mm-hmm. football games. And we never did anything like that. Throw stuff around, call each other names, and mm-hmm. all these things. You have a raspy voice for some reason. Is that affecting this program?
I think it'll be fine. It's better to have it be a little bit quiet because we can raise it up on the computer rather than having it be too loud. So
what's the chances that you want more?
Sorry, what?
What's the chances you're going to want me back?
If you think of more things that you want to add, you're welcome to send them along.
That's emailing to you?
Yeah, that's fine.
This is all I know about anything.
Okay. Your entire life history.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop recording here.